Hi everyone, in this week's episode of the HSE Network podcast, we look back on the December Global Series talk, which looks at micro-experimentation and how you can use it within EHS.
Thanks, Elliot. So it's really nice to be with everyone today. So yeah, so I'll talk about the power of micro-experimentation and how here at Wholesome we're trying to encourage more and more of this and why we're doing that. There we go. So before I do, just a little bit about the company for those of you who aren't familiar. Wholesome's the global leader in sustainable and innovative building materials and solutions. We have four main product lines, as you can see at the top there. So cement aggregates, ready mix, and solutions and products, which includes things like our Firestone roofing. As a company, we're in about 70 countries, have more than 2,000 operating sites. We have 70,000 employees. We also have about another 70,000 contractors on our sites every day, and then another 100,000 or so contracted drivers on the road every day. As you can see, we have a pretty spread out footprint across the globe. And pretty evenly spread. And I think this is where, this idea of micro experimenting is so powerful, because a top-down approach, to this many sites that are that diverse across that many countries and cultures and languages requires to gain ownership. We need to make sure that the sites have some ability to customize and implement, right? It's nearly impossible for us to recognize all the differences, either from a cultural or equipment aspect, to all the different operating locations across our footprint. So just a bit about our strategy. So about 4 years ago, we had decided that we clearly need to make accelerate progress across HSE and make strong improvements. We did what I would say is probably the typical thing. We brought people in from all over the globe, had a workshop to determine where our focus areas need to be. That's what's up top in green. So you see the major focus areas. The good news is it's working. You can see the results. We're not there yet by any means, but strong acceleration and progress across the board. So before I step into what I think of micro-experimenting, for me, it's pretty important to make sure that we have that within our team, the ability to own subjects, to drive them forward. I think, making sure that we have a philosophy as a team is really important to launching successful programs across the globe. So, we start with, if you look on the left, each person on our team owns a must-win battle. And this is our primary discussion throughout the year. And then really what we discuss more than anything is it having an impact? Will it have an impact if it's something that we're developing, or if it's something that we're managing? Is it having an impact on the results? I believe what we do on our team should have an impact, and we should see those results on the ground, right? And that's tough to do across a diverse organization, but that's where that quote from Steve Jobs about at the bottom there on the left is so good to me, because I think it's about making sure we have focus. And of course, in HSE, this can be really hard at times. I've heard many leaders and people in HSE say, everything's a priority. Well, if everything in HSE is a priority, nothing is, right? So narrowing down to what is going to have the biggest impact, although very tough, I think is critical to acceleration. And we're getting better and better at that, I think, as a team. The second piece there, that second column, some design principles. I'm not going to go through them all, but the first two, I think, are key to this micro-experimentation thing, right? First is, being agile, right? Producing a framework for people to be successful in is A, easier, and B, I think, allows for ownership in the field. and ownership where it matters, where the work is happening. So, you know, making sure that we're launching stuff. And then, you know, moving quickly and adjusting quickly means trying to make everything perfect doesn't work, right? Again, when you take a diverse organization and you're trying to roll these programs out, if you're trying to make everything perfect, it just goes too slow in the end. And it doesn't allow you to be flexible to different types of organizations, different types of people. And then making sure we have partners in the field, right? I mean, I'm a firm believer success breeds success, but working with those partners strategically to make sure that we're promoting the successes that we are having with our programs. And in the end, right, it's all about the user experience. I love this picture, matching and constantly going back and looking at our design and looking how it's using and then making tweaks to make it simpler, more effective, and match the overall, looking at the overall user experience. And I equate this a lot to, you know, software development. I don't think it's much different, right? And that's really, the user interface is so critical to a successful piece of software. So speaking of that, I'll talk about Apple for a second. And, you know, it's just this whole idea of micro experimenting really got me thinking about the iPhone particularly, and why it, one of the, you know, I think there's many reasons why it was successful, but one of the reasons why it's successful, and it really has a nice tie-in to health, safety, and environment, I think, because, you know, the iPhone is one of the most locked down systems, pieces of software, hardware, probably that's out there, right? They're very notoriously strict on being able to tweak the system or do something outside of Apple's approved rules. So a lot like health and safety, they have controls in place, right? That we need to put in place. But what they've done is take away all the noise so people can focus their creativity on the execution piece. So they have this really nice, strong framework that allows people to be successful, and that's the App Store, right? So, you know, I don't know how many different apps there are for, let's say, weather. I imagine thousands or hundreds of thousands even potentially of apps specifically for weather. They all basically do the same thing, right? Now, how you want to digest your weather may be a bit different than me. And the end result is the same. And that's what we care about, right? That you're able to receive the information for the daily, hourly, weekly weather. So you know what, you know, clothes to wear or predict a storm or these kinds of things, right? So I think, you know, allowing people to choose creates ownership, and allowing people to create within a framework creates ownership and ultimately accelerates progress, gets rid of the bureaucracy, all of these things that I think are impediments to accelerating HSE performance. So I think, you know, creating a system like that. So how do you do it? I'm going to talk about what our framework is that I believe sets people up for success. I've spoken about what we call our operating model for a while, to this audience. But, you know, I think it's worth just mentioning it again, because I think it's what sets us up for success in that realm. So on the left-hand side, you kind of have these old maturity models, which is one way to lay things out and show people what the vision is. But I think it speaks to an end state. And from an operations standpoint, you know, what do they want to do? They want to get to the finish line, right? That's how the operations are designed, right? To produce the product, to get it out the door. Let's get to the finish line. But in HSE, we all know there is no finish line. So I think it's more important to put a framework together for them on where they should be spending their time permanently in this area. And so that's what we've done. So it looks like this. It's sort of three pillars, or whatever you want to call them. I'm going to actually reverse it and start from the right here on engagement. Engagement is such a powerful piece, right? And it's just about overall engaging workers. I'm going to talk about one program specifically that we have, but it's about making sure every worker is engaged. So this is through things like rewards and recognition, even consequence management on the negative end, right? It's It's about creating people, making sure that conversations are happening in the workplace, and that we have a certain amount of presence in the workplace. And this is where there's a lot of room for creativity, right, within HSC. This is where we don't have to be so controlling on what we do. What we need to do is provide a way for people to be successful in the field with engagement, and to help encourage that to happen. So for us, when I speak to our operational leaders, I say this should be a third of your time that you spend on HSC is engagement. The next third of time I ask them to spend is on critical risk management. And this is a bit different. For me, this is where the strongest governance needs to be in place. This is recognizing your critical risks across your organization, institutionalizing the knowledge there, and making sure that you have the utmost discipline making sure those controls are in place across the organization. Not that there's no room for innovation or for creativity. There absolutely is, but I think, you know, this is where a more traditional top-down approach is actually helpful. Again, I think it takes away the noise and allows people to do more creativity on engagement and then on continuous improvement. The last bucket is continuous improvement. For me, this is everything else in HSC. You know, you could call it systems and processes or whatever you want to term the bucket. But the idea is that we're, you know, 1% better, whatever, every single day, essentially, right? It's the small gains, improving all the systems and making things more efficient and better. And in continuous improvement and engagement, there's a lot of room to experiment, to create successful opportunities on the ground for people. So just quickly, we leverage that against our bonus, which is for all of our senior leaders. And I'm just going to, so there's three indicators against each of the operating model pillars. I'm going to focus on one, which is the continuous improvement. This is the what we call the health, safety, and environmental improvement plan. Every single year, the countries, including their most senior leaders in each country, have to put together a plan with a limited number of strategic objectives for the year. And then we manage that plan just like performance management is done for an individual employee, right? We have a mid-year and year-end review. We look at progress quarter by quarter to make sure that the plan is being executed. We do have some top-down objectives that are aligned across the globe, but the majority of the improvement plan is allowed for flexibility across the local organization. What I see is the leadership gets really excited about the goals that they own, and those are a lot of times the most successful initiatives launched in the countries, because they designed them, they wrote them, they decided what their priority was, and they executed it, right? And I think this is really key. So they're allowed to essentially experiment. We do have some governance on the overall process. We have a chance to give some feedback, but it's really an open framework designed to help them improve and create ownership at the local level. So boots on the ground is our primary engagement program across the globe. Now, there's really a couple interesting aspects that fit the theme of micro experimenting and encouraging it overall. The first is how this program even began, right? It didn't start as a corporate program. Our team in Mexico created and launched this program, and had, and you can see the results there on the left, had some powerful results overall. And its brilliance is its simplicity. It's basically spending time in the field and doing coaching and feedback sessions with employees and workers overall. And you can see the results. And then it organically spread. We didn't force it anywhere. It was a success, and other countries wanted to know how to do it. Mexico shared. It spread throughout Latin America. And then almost 3 years ago, we encouraged the selection of it, or the rollout of it, I'm sorry, in India. And the results there were amazing. We have quite a large business in India. They do about 100 million man hours, to give you an idea of how large it is. And they achieve phenomenal results. So they had about 5 to 10 on-site fatalities every single year until they put the program in place and it stopped. So for the last 30 months without a fatal incident. And then it spread organically a bit more through MEA. And then eventually we did bring it global. Now, the global piece, and I'm going to talk about it in a second, is really just a framework for countries to roll it out. We allow a lot of flexibility in how they execute the program, even what they call the program. We have different names for the programs in different countries. We do have an app to help, you know, which is the tool to help people succeed and measure the success of the program overall. And we're taking that further and further. But it's really about creating this local brand that is ultimately encouraged and where we see the best success across our organization. So here's a little more facts and details about the program. I'll focus on an example of local branding. You have an example in South Africa. They don't call the program boots on the ground. That's what we call it globally, but that's not what they, if you said that in South Africa to the workers, they might not even know what you're talking about, right? They call it Ubuntu. And I think it's more powerful because they locally brand it. They ran a contest with the workers on what they should call it. So they gained engagement just even from the beginning. And they have local testimonies from workers, a communication plan they designed that's really quite brilliant overall. You can see an example there. And then they've run competitions specifically based around, you know, you can see it, the Premier League, right? So they focus their competitions specifically on what they think is going to be engaging locally. Overall, at the bottom, you can see some of the program stats. Again, without forcing this down, we have over 14,000 users. We're getting to the point where it's now truly is a global program, but that happened over the course of years, right? And I think allowing things to mature slowly sometimes, especially on the engagement front, to be spread organically, people are across the globe super excited to have their local programs and all feel like they own the local program, which I think is really a key to the success overall. The app, I think is another example of micro experimentation. It's a little more controlled, but we spend a lot of time getting feedback from the end users. We've learned a lot. We've only had a group app for a year and we're on our 37th version. So we keep tweaking, right? And for me, this is really important. I think that's a sign of success that we're able to move quickly, adapt as we get feedback, and grow with the growth of the program, the tools, right? Make them better and better. So at the end of the year, you can see the current app on the left. At the end of the year, we have a new user interface coming. You'll see it in the center. And the future for me is again, constantly looking at the user experience, making sure it's encouraging the right results. I often joke with my team, if TikTok can make everybody dance the same way around the world, you know, this tool should be able to help us do the same thing, right? Keep everyone safe around the world. So it needs to be engaging. And we have a lot of exciting things coming with AI and social networking that we're going to build into the app. Switching gears a little bit, we have another program. And really this started a few years ago when, I was hearing quite consistently, our team was hearing quite consistently, we should share good practices more, right? And this is for anybody on the corporate teams, this is always a bit, it sounds good. And of course, it's important, but it can be quite difficult, especially in a large organization. And then, you know, you can create this bottleneck where you end up discouraging the sharing because you end up trying to cleanse the good practices and make them best practices and make them all look perfect. And Make sure that, you know, even the pictures of it don't have anything. Maybe some guy's missing his PPE and we have to send it back and ask for more. And by the end of it, the person who submitted the good practice feels worn out, is discouraged from submitting another good practice. And we're tired and exhausted from trying to make the good practice something that's maybe presentable globally. So we got this idea of, okay, well, how, maybe we can do this differently. Why don't we crowdsource good practices? So we run 3 or 4 competitions a year on good practice selection. And we basically, it works quite simple. You submit your good practice. There's a standardized form in the software. And then people can vote, right? They can, you know, hit the thumbs up. And if you get so many likes, then it gets an expert review. And if you get an expert review and it gets the right evaluation, then it raises and wins a country award. And then the country awards move to the group awards. And we do the same thing. We do reviews of them and we select the top 20, 25, this kind of thing. And we put them into a system called Pairwise. It's a piece of this ideation software that we use. And you've probably seen it before on things like BuzzFeed and such. But it basically brings 2 good practices up side by side and says, which one do you like better? And you vote. And whichever one, and then the system randomizes them and makes sure that they all get seen, at the same amount. And we get thousands of people to vote, right? Because it's kind of fun and it's easy. And you can vote once or you could vote to see all the different matches. It doesn't matter, but it encourages engagement. The great thing isn't actually the end selection of this is the best good practice. The great thing is that we've socialized with thousands and thousands of people across the organization, the good practices, by moving them slowly up the ladder and then running these engaging contests overall. All of the ones in the top 20 are good. Right. So what happens is people start to learn about them and then hopefully encouraged to submit the next time because they see the winners and it was fun and engaging overall. And the process is fairly easy for the person to submit an idea or a good practice in action. This is the process we use. I won't go through it specifically, but it's pretty much what I mentioned before. We use, you know, sort of a specific timeline. We ask a very specific question to help encourage solutions of challenges that we're having, right? And that's really where we focus our good practices. So it's not just any good practice out there. We really try to ask very specific questions and get solutions to those issues in the field so that we can promote globally a solution to a problem that we're specifically challenged on. And another example, and it's the last one I have, is around sharing within our own network. So we have a monthly call with all the HSE professionals around the globe, which ends up being around 170 people each month. And instead of being a top-down approach where we just talk from the corporate out to the network, every month we make sure that we have what we call a country corner, at least, or sometimes 2 country corners, where we ask the countries to present to the globe, right? So we make sure that they have a section in there where peers are presenting to their peers. And it's really everything. It's stuff from engagement, it's stuff on technical solutions across the board, how they got it done. It's a chance for everyone else to ask their peers questions about specific initiatives that are happening. And it's a really good way of sharing. And we encourage this and try to reward the people that that participate. So these are just more, kind of detailed examples, some more environmental related issues, but of some of the things. And, you know, these are both a little bit more technical in nature, but we cover pretty much everything in these experiences. So that's it overall. I guess, you know, just in sort of final statement, I think, you know, we need to, as a profession, I think we need to keep challenging how we create ownership and accountability. I think encouraging micro experimentation is one way to do that, and a powerful way to do that. And I think if we focus on setting up a framework that encourages people to participate, but also ensures that they're successful in whatever that they design in the field, I think this is where, you know, we can have more success and accelerate results. And it's where we're seeing, I think, the most encouraging aspects of our program. So thank you very much.
That was amazing. Thank you, Jeffrey. Really, really interesting, and some really fantastic points there. And I'm sure there's lots of people scribbling lots of bits down. So we'll obviously, for those of you as well who are scribbling notes down, we will get all the PowerPoints from all the sessions throughout the event, and you'll get an email in the next sort of few days with those on. So don't worry if you missed anything, you will get a chance to go back. But Jeffrey, that was amazing. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you.
Excellent. As I said, that was a key topic that came up in the Advisory Council call. And if any of you have got something you'd like to see at our events next year, then make sure you get in contact. That was a key topic that came up in micro experimentation. We gave it to Jeffrey and he smashed it. So amazing. Thank you. We are now going to just break for just over 30 minutes for lunch. So anybody who wants to go and grab a bite to eat or drink or whatever, maybe answer some emails, etc. You've now got just over 30 minutes to do so. We are going to be back at 1:30 European time, of course, 12:30 here in the UK, with Andresa Hernandez from Siemens on growing and learning as an OHS professional. And then we've got the one final session after that. And about 2:10, the interview we hosted with Vicky Simmons earlier on this week, a candid account of an extreme nervous breakdown. Like I say, both those sessions were really great. So join us again in just over 30 minutes. Like I say, we're stopping for lunch in 30 minutes, then we'll be back for the two final sessions. So we'll look forward to seeing you in about 30 minutes' time.